run ships. Gus hunched bigger with his elbow and mumbled good-naturedly,
Aw, nigga, quit thinking about it. You'll go nuts.
The plane was gone from the sky, and the white plumes of floating smoke were thinly spread, vanishing. Because he was restless and had time on his hands, Bigger yawned again and hoisted his arms high above his head. Nothing ever happens, he complained.
What you want to happen?
Anything, Bigger said with a wide sweep of his dingy palm, a sweep that included all the possible activities of the world. Then their eyes were riveted. A slate-colored pigeon swooped down to the middle of the streetcar tracks and began strutting to and fro with ruffled feathers, its fat neck bobbing with regal pride. A streetcar rumbled forward, and the pigeon rose swiftly through the air, on wings stretched so taut and sheer that Bigger could see the gold of the sun through their translucent tips. He tilted his head and watched the slate-colored bird flap and wheel out of sight over the edge of a high roof.
Now if I could only do that, Bigger said.
Gus laughed.
Nigga, you nuts.
I reckon we the only things in this city that can't go where we want to go and do what we want to do.
Don't think about it, Gus said.
I can't help it.
That's why you're feeling like something awful's going to happen to you, Gus said. You think too much.
What in hell can a man do? Bigger asked, turning to Gus.
Get drunk and sleep it off.
I can't. I'm broke. Bigger crushed his cigarette and took out another one and offered the package to Gus. They continued smoking. A huge truck swept past, lifting scraps of white paper into the sunshine. The bits settled down slowly.
Gus?
Huh?
You know where the white folks live?
Yeah, Gus said, pointing eastward.
Over across the line. Over there on Cottage Grove Avenue.
Nah, they don't, Bigger said.
What do you mean?
Gus asked, puzzled.
And where do they live?
Bigger doubled his fist and struck his solar plexus. Right down here in my stomach, he said. Gus looked at Bigger searchingly, then away as though ashamed.
Yeah, I know what you mean, he whispered.
Every time I think of them, I feel them, Bigger said.
Yeah, and in your chest and throat too, Gus said.
It's like fire.
And sometimes you can't hardly breathe.
Bigger's eyes were wide and placid, gazing into space. That's when I feel like something awful is going to happen to me. Bigger paused, narrowed his eyes.
No, it ain't like something going to happen to me. It's like I was going to do something I can't help.
Yeah, Gus said with an uneasy eagerness. His eyes were full of a look compounded of fear and admiration for Bigger.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like you're going to fall and don't know where you're going to land.
Gus's voice trailed off. The sun slid behind a big white cloud and the street was plunged in cool shadow. Quickly, the sun edged forth again, and it was bright and warm once more. A long, sleek black car, its fenders glinting like glass in the sun, shot past them at high speed and turned a corner a few blocks away. Bigger pursed his lips and sang.
Zoom!
They got everything, Gus said.
They own the world, Bigger said.
Oh, what the hell, Gus said.
Let's go in the pool room.
Okay. They walked toward the door of the pool room.
Say, you taking that job you told us about?
Gus asked. I don't know.
You talk like you don't want it.
Oh, hell yes, I want the job, Bigger said. They looked at each other and laughed. They went inside.
The pool room was empty, save for a fat black man who held a half-smoked, unlit cigar in his mouth and leaned on the front counter. To the rear burned a single green-shaded bulb.
"Hi, Doc," Bigger said.
"You boys kind of early this morning," Doc said.
"Jack or G.H. around yet?" Bigger asked.
"No," Doc said.
"Let's shoot a game," Gus said.
"I'm broke," Bigger said.
"I got some money."
"Switch on the light. The ball's a rack," Doc said.
Bigger turned on the light. They lagged for first shot. Bigger won. They started playing. Bigger's shots were poor. He was thinking of Blum's, fascinated with the idea of the robbery, and a little afraid of it.
"Remember what we talked about so much?" Bigger asked in a flat, neutral tone.
"No."
"Old Blum."
"Oh," Gus said. "We ain't talked about that for a month. How come you think of it all of a sudden?"
"Let's clean the place out."
"I don't know."
"It was your plan from the start," Bigger said.
Gus straightened and stared at Bigger, then at Doc, who was looking out the front window.
"You going to tell Doc? Can't you never learn to talk low?"
"Oh, I was just asking you, do you want to try it?"
"No."
"How come? You scared 'cause he's a white man?"
"No, but Blum keeps a gun. Suppose he beats us to it."
"Oh, you scared, that's all. He's a white man and you scared."
"The hell I'm scared."
Gus, hurt and stung, defended himself. Bigger went to Gus and placed an arm about his shoulders.
"Listen, you won't have to go in. You just stand at the door and keep watch, see? Me and Jack and G.H. will go in. If anybody comes along, you whistle, and we'll go out the back way, that's all."
The front door opened. They stopped talking and turned their heads.
"Here comes Jack and G.H. now," Bigger said.
Jack and G.H. walked to the rear of the pool room.
"What you guys doing?" Jack asked.
"Shooting a game. Want to play?" Bigger asked.
"You asking him to play and I'm paying for the game," Gus said.
They all laughed, and Bigger laughed with them, but stopped quickly. He felt that the joke was on him, and he took a seat alongside the wall and propped his feet upon the rungs of a chair, as though he had not heard. Gus and G.H. kept on laughing.
"You niggas is crazy," Bigger said. "You laugh like monkeys, and you ain't got nerve enough to do nothing but talk."
"What you mean?" G.H. asked.
"I got a haul all figured out," Bigger said.
"What haul?"
"Old Blum's."
There was silence. Jack lit a cigarette. Gus looked away, avoiding the conversation.
"If old Blum was a black man, you all would be itching to go. 'Cause he's white, everybody's scared."
"I ain't scared," Jack said. "I'm with you."
"You say you got it all figured out?" G.H. asked.
Bigger took a deep breath and looked from face to face. It seemed to him that he should not have to explain.
"Look, it'll be easy. They ain't nothing to be scared of. Between 3 and 4 ain't nobody in the store but the old man. The cop is way down at the other end of the block. One of us will stay outside and watch. 3 of us go in, see? One of us will throw a gun on old Blum. One of us will make for the cash box under the counter. One of us will make for the back door and have it open so we can make a quick getaway down the back alley. That's all. It won't take 3 minutes.
"I thought we said we wasn't never going to use a gun," G.H. said. "And we ain't bothered no white folks before."
"Can't you see? This is something big," Bigger said.
He waited for more objections. When none were forthcoming, he talked again.
"We can do it if you niggas ain't scared."
Save for the sound of Doc's whistling up front, there was silence. Bigger watched Jack closely.
He knew that the situation was one in which Jack's word would be decisive. Bigger was afraid of Gus, because he knew that Gus would not hold out if Jack said yes. Gus stood at the table, toying with a cue stick, his eyes straying lazily over the billiard balls, scattered about the table in the array of an unfinished game. Bigger rose, and sent the balls whirling with a sweep of his hand, then looked straight at Gus, as the gleaming balls kissed and rebounded from the rubber cushions, zigzagging across the table's green cloth. Even though Bigger had asked Gus to be with him in the robbery, the fear that Gus would really go made the muscles of Bigger's stomach tighten. He was hot all over. He felt as if he wanted to sneeze and could not, only it was more nervous than wanting to sneeze. He grew hotter, tighter. His nerves were taut and his teeth were on edge. He felt that something would soon snap within him.
"God damn it, say something, somebody."
"I'm in," Jack said again.
"I'll go if the rest goes," G.H. said.
Gus stood without speaking, and Bigger felt a curious sensation, half sensual, half thoughtful. He was divided and pulled against himself. He had handled things just right so far. All but Gus had consented. The way things stood now, there were three against Gus, and that was just as he had wanted it to be. Bigger was afraid of robbing a white man, and he knew that Gus was afraid, too. Blum's store was small, and Blum was alone, but Bigger could not think of robbing him without being flanked by his three pals. But even with his pals, he was afraid. He had argued all of his pals but one into consenting to the robbery. And toward the lone man who held out, he felt a hot hate and fear. He had transferred his fear of the whites to Gus. He hated Gus, because he knew that Gus was afraid, as even he was, and he feared Gus because he felt that Gus would consent, and then he would be compelled to go through with the robbery. Like a man about to shoot himself, and dreading to shoot, and yet knowing that he has to shoot, and feeling it all at once and powerfully, he watched Gus and waited for him to say yes. But Gus did not speak. Bigger's teeth clamped so tight that his jaws ached. He edged toward Gus, not looking at Gus, but feeling the presence of Gus all over his body, through him, in and out of him, and hating himself and Gus because he felt it. Then he could not stand it any longer. The hysterical tensity of his nerves urged him to speak, to free himself. He faced Gus, his eyes red with anger and fear, his fists clenched and held stiffly to his sides.
"You black son of a bitch," he said in a voice that did not vary in tone. "You scared 'cause he's a white man."
"Don't cuss me, Bigger," Gus said quietly.
"I am cussing you."
"You don't have to cuss me," Gus said.
"Then why don't you use that black tongue of yours?" Bigger asked. "Why don't you say what you're going to do?"
"I don't have to use my tongue unless I want to."
"You bastard. You scared bastard."
"You ain't my boss," Gus said.
"You yeller," Bigger said. "You scared to rob a white man."
"Oh, Bigger, don't say that," G.H. said. "Leave him alone."
"He's yellow," Bigger said. "He won't go with us."
"I didn't say I wouldn't go," Gus said.
"Then for Christ's sake, say what you're going to do," Bigger said.
Gus leaned on his cue stick and gazed at Bigger, and Bigger's stomach tightened as though he were expecting a blow and were getting ready for it. His fists clenched harder. In a split second, he felt how his fist and arm and body would feel if he hit Gus squarely in the mouth, drawing blood. Gus would fall, and he would walk out, and the whole thing would be over, and the robbery would not take place. And his thinking and feeling in this way made the choking tightness rising from the pit of his stomach to his throat slacken a little.
"You see, Bigger,"
began Gus in a tone that was a compromise between kindness and pride.
"You see, Bigger, you the cause of all the trouble we ever have. It's your hot temper. Now how come you want to cuss me? Ain't I got a right to make up my mind? No, that ain't your way. You start cussing. You say I'm scared.
It's you who's scared. You're scared I'm going to say yes, and you'll have to go through with the job.
Say that again. Say that again, and I'll take one of these balls and sink it in your goddamn mouth, Bigger said, his pride wounded to the quick.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Jack said.
You see how he is, Gus said.
Why don't you say what you're going to do? Bigger demanded.
I'm going with y'all,
Gus said in a nervous tone that sought to hide itself, a tone that hurried on to other things.
I'm going, but Bigger don't have to act like that. He don't have to cuss me.
Why didn't you say that at first? Bigger asked. His anger amounted almost to frenzy. You make a man want to sock you.
I'll help on the hall, Gus continued, as though Bigger had not spoken. I'll help just like I always help, but I'll be goddamn if I'm taking orders from you, Bigger. You're just a scared coward. You calling me scared so nobody will see how scared you is.
Bigger leaped at him, but Jack ran between them. G.H. caught Gus's arm and led him aside.
Who's asking you to take orders? Bigger said. I never want to give orders to a piss-slop like you.
You boys cut out that racket back there, Doc called.
They stood silently about the pool table. Bigger's eyes followed Gus as Gus put his cue stick in the rack and brushed chalk dust from his trousers and walked a little distance away. Bigger's stomach burned, and a hazy black cloud hovered a moment before his eyes and left. Mixed images of violence ran like sand through his mind, dry and fast, vanishing. He could stab Gus with his knife. He could slap him. He could kick him. He could trip him up and send him sprawling on his face. He could do a lot of things to Gus for making him feel this way.
Come on, G.H., Gus said.
Where are we going?
Let's walk.
Okay. What we gonna do? Jack asked. Meet here at 3?
Sure, Bigger said. Didn't we just decide?
I'll be here, Gus said, with his back turned.
When Gus and G.H. had gone, Bigger sat down and felt cold sweat on his skin. It was planned now, and he would have to go through with it. His teeth gritted, and the last image he had seen of Gus going through the door lingered in his mind. He could have taken one of the cue sticks and gripped it hard and swung it at the back of Gus's head, feeling the impact of the hard wood cracking against the bottom of the skull. The tight feeling was still in him, and he knew that it would remain until they were actually doing the job, until they were in the store taking the money.
You and Gus sure don't get along none, Jack said, shaking his head.
Bigger turned and looked at Jack. He had forgotten that Jack was still there.
Oh, that yellow black bastard, Bigger said.
He's all right, Jack said.
He's scared, Bigger said. To make him ready for a job, you have to make him scared two ways. You have to make him more scared of what'll happen to him if he don't do the job than of what'll happen to him if he pulls the job.
If we go into Blum's today, we oughtn't fuss like this, Jack said. We got a job on our hands, a real job.
Sure, I know, Bigger said.
Bigger felt an urgent need to hide his growing and deepening feeling of hysteria. He had to get rid of it, or else he would succumb to it. He longed for a stimulus powerful enough to focus his attention and drain off his energies. He wanted to run, or listen to some swing music, or laugh or joke, or read a real detective story magazine, or go to a movie, or visit Bessie. All that morning he had lurked behind his curtain of indifference and looked at things, snapping and glaring at whatever had tried to make him come out into the open. But now he was out. The thought of the job at Blum's and the tilt he had had with Gus had snared him into things, and his self-trust was gone. Confidence could only come again now through action so violent that it would make him forget. These were the rhythms of his life, indifference and violence, periods of abstract brooding and periods of intense desire, Moments of silence and moments of anger, like water ebbing and flowing from the tug of a faraway, invisible force. Being this way was a need of his as deep as eating. He was like a strange plant blooming in the day and wilting at night.